Kicking and Screaming When the Goldbergs End by Stephanie Weber. All those stories came from Us Weekly Online. That concludes today's readings from Us Weekly. This has been Lydia Coppell for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Clinics offer coronavirus tests. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 nurse. MidlandHealth.org, mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68 Nurse or 221-1111. Cash price for antibody testing, $50.
Saturday mornings, we bring you a variety of exciting publications and shows, beginning at 9 with Armed Forces News on Military Times, at 10 a.m. Sports Illustrated, at 11 o'clock, The Outdoor Show with readings from outdoor magazines, and at 12 noon, The Blind Handyman. Saturdays on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 41 and clear. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 23rd. Lowering carbon footprint vital to oil and gas's future. The story was written by Mella McEwen. With a new administration in place, the oil and gas industry is anticipating changes from the way it operates to how much global demand there is for its product. Quote, oil and gas is not going to be replaced overnight by renewables, assured Antoine Haff, co-founder of the data analytics company Kairos. Speaking via Zoom from Paris, where he has an office in addition to offices in New York and Houston, Haff noted the way energy is used is changing dramatically, as is the way crude oil is used. The world will still need considerable amounts of oil and natural gas, he said. Quote, it's important that oil and gas have a smaller carbon footprint, he said. It's important oil and gas be seen as part of the solution, not part of the problem, end quote. Being part of the solution means a focus on continuing to decrease methane and greenhouse gas emissions and improve carbon capture, he said. That is part of what drove him to co-found Kairos with Marty Ostermiller, who serves as chief financial officer. A former economist with the Energy Information Agency, responsible for oil analysis, Haff said he was struck by how the data being used for forecasting production, quote, had many blind spots. Some were obvious, like emerging markets, some not so obvious, like growing market shares. The market was less efficient, and investors had the wrong information, end quote. At the same time, he said he was struck by how new technology, satellites, communications devices, social media, and the internet were all creating massive accumulations of data that could be tapped into to create transparency around oil and gas operations. The company is also partnering with other companies to incorporate their data, including a new partnership with a Belgian company that utilizes ground sensors to detect emissions. as he, his founding partners, and the data scientists and mathematicians were figuring out how to blend the data from these different technologies into data points that could be used by clients, he said climate was coming to the forefront as an issue. Quote, businesses were spending more time looking at data that they felt was needed to get traction in reducing their carbon footprint, he said. They decided to look at methane emissions and, relying largely on satellite imaging, designed artificial intelligence and algorithms to extract commercially usable data to detect and measure large emissions and pinpoint the source. The company's efforts are global, comprehensive, and continuous, according to Half. Quote, it's essential. We found more methane leaking than we ever suspected when we began. We knew of only a handful of events and picked up hundreds, he said. He added, quote, we try to be global. We look everywhere and pick up things we don't expect. We also look at specific areas in detail and break them down to asset levels, identify specific equipment, whether it's a processing station in Russia, a disposal well in Nigeria, end quote. West Texas is more complex, he said, because of the large number of wells side by side and large numbers of operators who own those wells. The company picks up an aggregate of leaks, but finds it challenging to identify exact sources. It helps, he said, that the company has a complete onshore production database. The company is seeing interest from companies in partnering with Kairos on monitoring emissions. Quote, the U.S. industry is criticized for its methane footprint, but we found in 2020 emissions fell quite a bit, he reported. Continuing the quote, that was partly because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but there was also improvement in controlling emissions, end quote. There was criticism even from oil companies when then-President Trump rolled back the methane emissions regulations put in place by his predecessor, President Obama. But Half said that in doing so, Trump actually opened up a wider range of technology that could be used to track methane emissions. Controlling methane emissions should be seen as a profit center rather than a liability due to the cost of the equipment, repairs, and reporting, he said. By proving and demonstrating in a credible way that a company is reducing its carbon footprint responsibility, it actually brings down the cost of abatement and is an opportunity for cost savings, he said. Quote, it also makes the market recognize the profits of low-carbon energy, which should be rewarded, and let companies get a premium for their production, end quote. He foresees a time when producers can say the cargo of oil bound for Europe or Asia was produced with no methane emissions, or a cargo of liquefied natural gas was produced with no methane leakage. Texas Tech professor says canceling Keystone won't stop the flow of oil. The story was written by Mella McEwen. In one of his first acts as president, President Joe Biden canceled the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, which would bring oil sands oil from Alberta, Canada, to the Gulf Coast. Unsurprisingly, Alberta is a big loser in this development, as are Texas refiners who will find their crude supplies more expensive, said Michael Noel, economics professor at Texas Tech University. Speaking with the reporter Telegram by telephone, Noel said the big winners are Middle East oil producers and Permian Basin producers who will find less competition for their production. But in an illustration of unintended consequences, Noel said that the environment could also be a big loser because of the revoked permit. Quote, there's a good chance the environment will be a loser because that oil will move, he said. That oil sands oil will move from Alberta via truck, train, or through British Columbia to the ocean and then in tanker, all of which are less secure than pipelines, he said. They are more susceptible to spills or even terrorist attacks, he added. The $8 billion pipeline has been a hot-button environmental issue since its proposal in 2008. Construction of the Keystone XL pipeline was temporarily delayed in 2015 under President Barack Obama and revived in 2017 under President Donald Trump. Quote, "You have to keep in mind there are millions of miles of pipeline in the U.S., and some of them already carry oil sands oil from Canada to the U.S., Noel pointed out. Don't overestimate the importance of this one project. The Keystone has become a political football as much as an infrastructure project," end quote. Despite the drive toward more renewable energy, more efficient cars, and more electric vehicles, Noel pointed out that U.S. oil demand is coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic is at an all-time high. Quote, "We will get oil. It may come from the Middle East, but we'll still put it in our cars and drive around," he said. And despite the millions of miles of pipelines currently in existence, he said more will be needed to help meet that demand, infrastructure under construction all the time. Quote, "There's no real legitimate argument that we should shrink or remove infrastructure," Noel said, "and that construction should proceed smoothly as long as the projects don't become political footballs like the Keystone XL," he added. Quote, "What was unique about the Keystone is it seemed like it was a proxy for something else," he observed. "If you were for the fight against climate change, you were against the Keystone Pipeline. If you favor the pipeline, then you must be against fighting climate change. But you can be in favor of green energy, support fighting climate change, and still be in favor of pipelines," end quote. Oil industry veteran sees opportunity amid turmoil. The story was written by Milla McEwen. All the turmoil and economic pain the oil and gas industry has undergone in the last year could result in a healthier industry. Quote, "I see a healthier industry," Steve Gray, founder and chief executive officer of RSP Permian before it was sold to Contra Resources, said during an Oilfield Strong webinar presented by OTA Compression and Kimark Systems. Quote, "We won't see the super growth of the last decade, but the thing is there's a place in the world economy for oil and gas for the rest of my lifetime, and it will be a healthy industry," he continued. "We'll have to do things differently, but that's probably a good thing," end quote. Gray sees opportunities for smaller companies as large companies who get larger through mergers trim their portfolios and sell properties. "It will be harder to access capital, but that's probably a good thing too," he said, "because there may have been too much capital chasing the industry in the past. As companies become more disciplined and quit growing production for the sake of growth, and consumption returns to more normal levels," quote, "this period of underinvestment will catch up with us, and when it does, supply and demand come back in balance, and prices will strengthen," end quote. Gray went on to say that the industry will be driven by the need to return money to shareholders in the form of dividends or share buybacks. Quote, "Investors have made clear they're not interested in funding the hypergrowth of the last few years and want to see return on capital. They have forced public company behavior to change, and even high-growth companies are talking slower growth, operating with less leverage, and returning capital to shareholders," end quote. Another driver for oil companies, Gray told Grant Schwartzelder, owner and president of OTA and Kimark, is the focus on ESG, environment, social, and governance. Because of the concern about the industry's impact on the environment, he said some investors will never return. But, he said, quote, "Don't underestimate the people who want to make money," end quote. He said he asked an investor recently about their plans on the ESG front and whether or not they plan to quit investing in the energy space. Quote, "The answer was not to quit, but they were certainly focused on ESG and prefer companies that have good ESG standards over those that don't. That's a point of differentiation between public companies going forward in attracting investors. Show financial success, but also decent ESG," end quote. "Don't just focus on the environmental, but the governance component as well," he advised. As a member of the Compensation Committee on the Range Resources Board, he said he receives a lot of feedback from investors about the disconnect between executive pay and corporate performance. Quote, "That's as big a part of the ESG problem as environmental. Our industry has work to do in terms of repairing our reputation. If we do that and show decent returns to investors, we'll see capital come back," Gray said.
Killing Unity on Day One by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. www.themarketperspective.com. Quote from the Wall Street Journal, Thursday, January 21st. Former TransCanada, now TC Energy, explained the benefits of the Keystone Pipeline to Team Biden. It included 10,000 American Union jobs, steel pipe made in the USA, $10 million green job training fund, $500 million for suppliers, and 100% renewable power to operate the pipeline. Team Biden stopped the pipeline construction on day one. This strands investment in Canada, kills jobs in America, and angers one of our biggest trading partners. End quote. Mark McManus, president of the Association of Union Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, replied, "Mr. Biden is listening to the voices of fringe activists instead of union members." The late Senator John Tower observed that the Democratic Party is a loose coalition of special interest groups that somehow pull together each 4 years for an election. The Keystone situation is a perfect example of that observation. It is tough to serve multiple masters with different goals. Did anyone notice Antifa attacked Democratic headquarters yesterday? So much for the winter of love. This column is on record predicting a negative direction for energy policy the next 4 years. Bingo. That came true on day one of the Biden presidency. We will update you on Jennifer Granholm's day one as energy secretary once she is confirmed. The Wall Street Journal claims Janet Yellen is a great economist. One cannot tell that by her testimony regarding a national $15 minimum wage. She testified doubling the current minimum wage would have no effect on business. Understand, the minimum wage for tip waiters is just over $2, so that would be a 600% increase. And it gets worse. Biden wants to raise the corporate tax rate from 21%, lowered under Trump, to 28%. The nation's largest 25,000 firms pay 90% of the corporate tax revenue, but that would leave the 6 million small firms less than $2.5 million in annual profit to pay another 7 percentage points in tax. Given that many of these are family-owned restaurants and bars which have been closed, this is another way to prevent reinvestment in business, not to mention a raise for everyone, for anyone. Peter Robb, general counsel for the National Relations Board,
was told to quit or be fired. No president has fired a general counsel since the NLRB was formed in 1947. But there are three Republicans and one Democrat on the board. A different general counsel can slow things while Biden scrambles to reward his union donors. Rob refused to resign, which may spark a legal confrontation. Tech stocks have soared to new highs, and investor enthusiasm is on boil. We are at the end of another 58-day rally. Previous stints have ushered in a correction. We will see. The Economist. Friendlier Skies by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group, and serves as a distinguished professor at the International Institute for Advanced Studies. One of the industries hardest hit by the pandemic has been airlines. The sharp decrease in demand for air travel due to shutdowns and safety concerns has severely crimped revenues and profits. Companies are struggling to maintain service and, in some cases, to survive intact. According to Airlines for America, 2020 U.S. airline passenger volume was down 56% domestically and 66% internationally compared to 2019. Airlines responded by decreasing the numbers of flights. Domestic departures fell 38% and international dropped 45%. Through the third quarter, U.S. passenger airline operating revenue had experienced pre-tax losses of $36 billion. Maintaining air travel infrastructure is essential to both long-term economic sustainability and quality of life. Relief was provided by the CARES Act, which included $25 billion for airline payrolls as long as layoffs were not implemented through September 1st. However, as the pandemic dragged on, airlines were forced to lay off personnel following the end of the stimulus. The latest bill included $15 billion for passenger air carriers and $1 billion for contractors for direct payroll support to protect the jobs of pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, gate attendants, and other personnel. To qualify for funds, airlines must agree to not reduce pay or benefits or furlough any employees through March 31st. As well as recall employees who were furloughed following the end of the earlier stimulus. This aid could have a significant impact in maintaining airline employment going forward. Of greater significance, the pandemic will likely have long-term effects on the industry. Business travel has been particularly hard hit and has been slower to rebound as companies have scaled back travel and moved many meetings and conferences to virtual settings. Estimates of the permanent reduction in business travel are as high as 36%, although we project it to be less dramatic. Business travel is a key component of airline revenue, typically around 30%, and higher-priced corporate trips tend to subsidize cheaper leisure fares that fill marginal seats. Less business travel could lead to pricier leisure fares or fewer available seats and flight options. Airlines will also have to continue to seek opportunities to manage costs. In addition to reducing flights, some have retired older aircraft, increased cargo business, and taken other steps designed to enhance efficiency. Companies have taken on unprecedented amounts of debt, and credit ratings have been negatively affected. With vaccination deployment and enhanced therapeutics and safety measures, demand should begin to increase later this year, though a surge is not expected. Pent-up desire among leisure travelers will likely be the primary initial source of stimulus. Airlines are essential to global efficiency and will be ultimately restored to strength. The path will likely be rocky, but navigable. Stay safe.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Limited MOSC musicians ready for Mozart performance by Michael Bauer, M-B-A-U-E-R at OAOA.com. When Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was writing and composing music, he was writing pieces for orchestras that were fewer than 80 musicians during the 1700s. That should come in handy for the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale when it returns to the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center later this month for their Masterworks series titled Mostly Mozart. The performance will take place at 7:30 p.m. on January 30th. Because of COVID safety protocols, the Midland Odessa Symphony has seen a reduced number of musicians on the stage to help with social distancing. Regardless, MOSC Program Executive Director Ethan Wills has been pleased with what they've been able to accomplish in the face of the pandemic and still put on a masterful performance. "It's actually kind of nice," Wills said. "When Mozart was writing symphonies, they were still pretty small. They got bigger over the years, over the centuries. But by modern-day standards, they were pretty small. By playing a Mozart piece fully as he would have expected in his time, it was way less than the 80-person orchestra. We're performing them as they were meant to be played." The Midland Odessa Symphony players have been really good at going above and beyond to do what's needed of their ability to get the job done. Led by music director and conductor Gary Lewis, the program celebrates the rich musical repertoire of one of the most beloved composers of all time in Mozart. "It's part of our masterworks that we do," Wills said. "This is one of the four concerts that we would do in a regular season, but this is not a regular season. This is our first masterworks of this season." The program will open with the overture to The Abduction from the Seraglio, which is one of the well-known operas that Mozart was commissioned to write at age 26. Mozart's 41st symphony, Jupiter, will also be performed. Longtime oboe player Karen Crutchfield will be the featured musician. "She's a fantastic oboe player," Wills said. "We usually do this once a year where we feature one of our long-standing musicians that have held a good spot with us, and it's her time. That was decided before the pandemic. We're glad that we've been able to do it." Crutchfield is playing in her 25th season with the orchestra and is an accomplished musician and longtime music educator, as her talents will be showcased in David Mulliken's Oboe Concerto. "It's one of the most beautiful pieces of music," Crutchfield said of the concerto. "It doesn't follow the traditional form of fast, slow, fast. It has four movements. The beginning is not that fast. The second movement is super fast. The third is absolutely gorgeous, where I get to interact with our cellist. It feels like you're playing in a movie. It's so pretty and sounds like movie music. The instrumentation is unique for this piece. We have strings, percussion, and harp, and the percussion adds so much to the piece." Crutchfield has been playing the oboe for 35 years now. I originally started off as a flute player in the fifth grade, Crutchfield said. I went to junior high, and there were 24 flutes, and I thought, forget that. I don't want to be one of that many people. I got the oboe out and started working on it. My dad played the bassoon, and his brother played the oboe. It's in my family. Trying to hold a performance in the middle of a pandemic has presented every symphony across the country with a unique challenge, and the MOSC, like everyone else, has had to find ways to help keep the show going without putting audience members and musicians' lives in jeopardy. It's been kind of weird, Wills said. Quite honestly, I've felt like I'm fighting this duality where if you're open and having something, it means you don't care, and if you're closed, you care. I think there's a middle ground, especially with what we have available because the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center being so large. We can reduce the seating that's available to patrons. We can spread out the musicians on stage. The Wagner Noel staff has done an amazing job of creating a seating arrangement to make sure that everyone is distanced from each other. Masks are required in the lobby. They've changed their protocols on checking bags, and hand sanitizer is available. He says the musicians have been doing a lot. They're distanced out, which makes it harder to play, Wills said. It's hard to do that. A lot of our wind instruments are using bell covers, which is basically a mask for their instruments. Anyone that's not blowing wind has to have a mask on, like our string players and percussionists. It's interesting how that works. We're doing everything we can to the safest option. Intermissions have also been changed accordingly.